Welcome to this edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley coming to you this week from New York City, and I am here in New York City for the annual gathering, the Left Forum, which is going to be held at John Jay College of Criminal Justice of the City University of New York, and that traditionally held there. It's on 10th and 11th Avenues, 58th Street, thereabouts, and you can find your way in. And the time to be there, if you're hearing this, you do have time to get over there. If you're in the New York area on Saturday, the 21st of May, you have time to get over to John Jay and catch our panels, depending on when you're hearing this. And certainly on Sunday, we have a panel on Alexander Hamilton. Come to that. That's the one I'm looking forward to particularly, because I want to do the historical explication and show why Thomas Jefferson was a bum, Madison was a failure, and Alexander Hamilton, well, this is the one indispensable person. Without him, no United States. And of course, with Jefferson, you could say, without him, no Confederate States of America. But that's not very good, is it? So we'll be there. So the idea is, if you can, be there from noon to noon. Now, some of this will be reaching people a little bit too late, but noon Saturday to noon Sunday, Tax Wall Street Party with four panels. And, of course, the chairwoman, Daniela Walls, will be there, and she'll be speaking at least three of those panels, maybe four. And we'll also then have a gathering in the evening. Come for that. On Saturday evening, we'll have a get-together, right? Some kind of a gathering of people interested in supporting the Tax Wall Street Party. And I'll be repeating this at the beginning of a couple of more segments. But now, the problem of fighting Trump, and this is indeed my principal theme, principal reason for being here this year. Trump is mentally ill. Trump is a psychopath. And the 20th century is littered with examples of what happens when you take, when you let a psychopath take power in a country. Where does that lead? Mussolini and Hitler were megalomaniacs. They were psychopaths. This was pretty clear. This was pretty much in the public domain in 1922, at the time Mussolini launched his March on Rome, and then in late January 1933, where Hitler seized power in Germany, in Berlin, and all legal, right? The way Trump is doing it, right? Not exactly legal, but under color of law, more or less, right? So you throw some communist congressman out of the parliament, right? That's all right. But that's the way Hitler tried to do it, because it's not all right. And therefore, we have to be aware of this. We will have no excuse, by the way. The Italians had no excuse. The Italians had a big excuse, because it had never been done, right? When Mussolini came on the scene, that had never been tried before, and it took him about 2 to 3 years to consolidate his actual dictatorship. In the case of the Germans, well, you got to give them some benefit of the doubt. I mean, they had had the example of fascist Italy in front of them for more than a decade, but still, it was not really possible for many people to foresee what Hitlerism would look like. But now, what excuse do we have? I often get the feeling that people have just wantonly thrown away all the lessons of the history of the 20th century. All that stuff about never again doesn't seem to mean a damn thing. Because here we have this lunatic who's prating and posturing about what he's going to do. And it's going to be ugly. But first, a little inspiration from the older heroes, historically the heroic generations that have made the United States possible. And it goes like this. These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier, And the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands by it now, and it means she that's who stands by it now, deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. But we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheaply, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. Heaven knows how to put a proper price upon its goods, and it would be strange indeed if so celestial an article as freedom should not be highly rated. So, you know, Thomas Paine. That's the crisis. December 23rd, 1776, right? Independence declared, but then the British closing in, and it was an ugly, ugly scene. So these are the times that Tryman's souls and the Sunshine Patriots are running. Many of us shocked to see how people have degenerated under this shockwave of the Trump candidacy. Well, we've been arguing he's a fascist, he's a neo-Nazi, a Nazi, whatever fills the bill. I also want to remind people the Tax Wall Street Party is leading the fight all over. Our fine activists and organizers were in Lawrenceville, New Jersey yesterday, and this was the fundraiser. Essentially, it was at the Armory in Lawrenceville, New Jersey, right? It's not so far from Princeton. And the people were gathering for a $25,000 a plate fundraiser so that they could retire the debts of Governor Chris Christie. So isn't that a monstrous event? So, we were there with our typical Trump equals Nazi poster, and also with another very striking one, which has this sort of red, like a face, like a bag full of raw pork. That would be Trump. And then big letters below, Nazi. Everybody can see, what's going on with this guy. So there we were, and, a number of news media were taking pictures, of course, of the entire thing. So, that's our intervention. And, what can we say? It looks like, the people from, InfoWars were there and they did an interview with the two activists organizers. So we'll be checking into that. In other words, there's an ideological and quite severely with the libertarian community. It is the right turn being done by Trump, right? We've called it the night of the long knives because that's what it was for Hitler. Hitler had to be in power for about a year. So we have, the New Jersey Trump protests, let's see. Anyway, this all going on. The point being, there's this right turn. So, what's with the right turn? Hitler called it the Night of the Long Knives. This was then in June 1934. So he'd been in power for almost a year and a half before he decided, let's get rid of these plebeians, let's get rid of these gutter snipes, let's get rid of the brown shirts, and let's give all the power to the black-shirted SS. And he dumped them. And that's what Trump is doing now on the installment plan, week by week. Back in a minute. Welcome back to the Old Crisis Radio. Welcome to New York City. Here for the Left Forum. Come and see us. There, we've got four panels between noon Saturday and noon Sunday. We'd be delighted to see you. And just going through the very important impact of our protest at the Lawrenceville what can we call it? Monster Fest of Plutocrats, $20,000 a plate to retire some of Chris Christie's campaign debts. So, looks like this has been picked up by the Independent of London, that our people were carrying posters depicting Trump as a Nazi, and they fear that many of his positions are too similar to those of Adolf Hitler during his rise to power in the 1930s. He's exploiting the fact that people are desperate and frustrated, which is the same thing that Hitler did. He came in a bad economy, and he had a simple answer to very complicated questions. Trump is doing the same thing. It's the Muslims. It's the Mexicans. It's the scapegoating, obviously. In order to implement Trump's controversial anti-immigration laws, such as mass deportation, he would institute martial law. And if you want to deport the 11 or 12 million people, that will take a police state, cattle cars, box cars, to ship them out. So that's in the London Independent. So getting the word out, right? Making the international media tell the truth by showing up and having something important to say, right? And say, I would certainly agree with people who want to go there and say he's a racist, he's a xenophobe, he's a misogynist, and so on. But this is not enough. There are too many of those things, such people going on around the U.S. So it's just not, it's not good enough. The one scientifically accurate and most polemically effective is that he's a fascist and a Nazi, right? So the right turn, of course, started with Manafort when Corey Lewandowski was abruptly demoted. Manafort came in from the torturer's lobby law firm with Roger Stone. Today, Manafort has been officially made the boss of the entire campaign, and poor Lewandowski has been demoted. Right? He's being treated the way Hitler treated the Strasser brothers, let's say, before he eliminated them completely. And we've got that guy Mnuchin, however he wants to say it, the guy from Soros, dear friends in the libertarian community, and also he's also from Goldman Sachs. So we have Soros and Goldman Sachs. It's okay, though. He's an outsider from Soros and from Goldman Sachs. And then this past week, we've had the meeting with Kissinger. And I know how Kissinger operates. I've observed him for many a decade. What he wants to do is to get his people into the various bureaucracies, the State Department, the CIA, and the rest of them, right? You name it. He's got a candidate. Whenever a vacancy appears, Henry Kissinger is there with a candidate from his stable of lackeys and yes men and proteges and people that he's he's mentoring. You get the idea. Mentee. And the mentee is good because it somehow conjures up lying. Le menteur. So this is what's going on. That was Mnuchin. And Trump is today saying that he wants to go on and meet with James Baker III from the Bush administration, George H.W. Bush. So that's where Kissinger is, and then Baker, a slightly different faction of the gangster Republican Party. So those are all insiders, aren't they, guys? Whatever happened to your vain promises? You are a bunch of dupes if you believe in Trump. That is just pathetic. So that's what's happening. But now, really, the big thing. Trump needs terrorism. Trump is going to rely on terrorism in order to get to the White House. And this has already begun. Last week, we had that severe bombing attack in Baghdad, killing 75 people. Now, that has gone, that kind of terrorism coming from ISIS generally has been occurring over the past week, and I believe we're now up to 150 dead in the Baghdad area, right? The strategy is apparently if the Iraqi army is making progress on the battlefield, right, moving towards Mosul and similar places to take care of ISIS, then ISIS response is a diversionary attack, right? Entlastungsangriff. So a diversionary attack which will force the Iraqi government to pull back some of their combat assets from the fighting front against ISIS and just use them then for guard duty in a place like Baghdad. Now, of course, that's not the way to use those troops with the training they have. They have to do what they do, and you can't expect them to sit around and guard, you know, various warehouses. Then they lose their edge. So that's one element. But the question then is, look at the way Trump has intervened in this. Right now, we're talking really about two things. We're talking about this unsafe intercept. The Pentagon on Thursday midday announced a an unsafe intercept of a U.S. Surveillance plane, right, EP-3 reconnaissance aircraft, near the Hainan island of China. And at that point, we had a couple of Chinese jets, at least two J-11 tactical aircraft, buzzed this U.S. intelligence aircraft, right? And this, we've had this in the Baltic, right? We've had the Crazy Ivan incidents, which I think are much exaggerated. But the whole Cold War, that stuff was going on all the time. It's kind of a structural feature. But in this case, it's the South China Sea. Now, I know there are a lot of people out there who, after the crimes of Bush, the elder Bush the younger especially, and other crimes, right? The Libyan incident, certainly a crime. But they have the idea that the U.S. is always wrong and that the U.S. is always the aggressor. Things are changing, and that's not true in every case automatically. So we have to look at those more carefully. But above all, we got to watch Trump. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Topley here in Washington, D.C. In New York City this week. And we're here for the Left Forum, and we hope you you stop by and take a look at it. And again, we'll be we'll have a kind of a gathering of friends and sympathizers of the Tax Wall Street Party on Saturday evening. So if you show up for the last panel, if you're in the New York area, stop by. Now, Trump feeds off terrorism. We're back to really George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, the terrorists were their best friends, right? Every time there was a major terror attack, that was Christmas for the Bush-Cheney administration. And now we're back to it, except because of this Trump factor, the things that were correctly recognized 10 years ago as outrageous provocations and unnecessary warmongering, bluster, and so forth, if it's carried out by Trump, well, then there's a whole group of libertarian opinion who think it's great. And it shows simply that these people are absolutely unprincipled, that they just don't care what the content of the policy is. It's a tribal concept. In other words, they say, well, I've thrown my lot in with the Trump candidacy, and therefore I'm going to go down the line for Trump. That's a very bad idea. And it's an even worse idea because it's come out with, from Trump. Now, what has he been saying? Well, starts off with, the disappearance of the Egypt Air jet, right? The one going from Paris to, Cairo, Egypt, disappeared over the Mediterranean. So what does Trump have to say? Soon as it happens, he gets tweeting, it looks like terrorism. It looks like terrorism. Then he starts with, ask Hillary who blew up the plane. Ask Hillary to see who blew up the plane. Then Trump says, I can fix it fast, but I won't tell, right? Here we are with Nixon, right? I have in my pocket a secret plan to put an end to the Vietnam War, but I can't show it to you. It never existed. I can fix it fast, but I won't show it to you now. But in the meantime, he says, all I can tell you is that ISIS, ISIS is laughing at us, says Trump. ISIS is laughing at us. This is now, I hope, clear to everybody. We have been talking now for weeks and weeks and weeks about the hypothesis of a September-October surprise of terrorism that would stampede the American people, create mass hysteria, and call essentially you know, the whole process into question by attempting to create an atmosphere of complete terrorism. Now, here's what he says on this is now Trump on Morning Joe, Mika Brzezinski, trying to put up a pathetic objection to his tactics, right? Trump says, if another couple of planes go down, there will be the biggest depression worldwide. And the idea is that if a couple of more planes go down, there will be no more air travel, no more commerce. And out of that, Trump derives no to four more years of the weak Hillary Clinton. Now, look at that. That's an attack from the right, dear friends. He's saying, I'm a bigger warmonger, Trump. Trump is a bigger warmonger than Hillary. And he's also on the level of the international economy. Who the hell cares if there's a trade war? Well, I mean, I think it's important to institute a reasonable protective tariff. I think a permanent, structural, not a weapon, not a bargaining chip, but a 15% protective tariff. With Trump, it's going to be 35% or nothing, depending on whether they say something nice about him. I'm calling this guy Demented Donald. Demented Donald. Dementia. Mr. Dementia. The dementia candidate, right? Did I mention that he's got dementia? You get the idea. So, one of the triggers for these latest episodes had been, Robert Gates, grand commis of the, U.S., regime, right? He's a, sort of a gray eminence, been there for a long time, right? Goes back to the first Bush, goes back even further than that. Actually, it goes back to Zbigniew Brzezinski. So this Gates has been on the air and also with his book saying, well, this is uninformed bluster. Yeah, right. Gates against Trump. He's unpredictable. He's got uninformed bluster, and he has contempt for experts. Of course, it's easy for Trump to say, yeah, if they're so smart, if he's so smart, why ain't he rich? What has been going on with the U.S. Foreign policy does not indicate any great pool of talent on the part of this this Gates. But look, this is now a candidate who, in the eyes of much of the public, needs terrorism. Let's remember, Bill Maher talked about it in March. Thomas Friedman on Meet the Press a couple of weekends ago. Frank Luntz talked about it. Charlie Rose talking to Maggie Haberman of the New York Times. On WNYC, we had Brian Lehrer talking to Mark Green. We got five fairly mainstream, fairly serious, well-respected in these establishment terms. They've all been talking about this idea of an October surprise. And again, think about what happened last time. Benghazi was an October surprise in the age of early voting, carried out with the help of Petraeus and with the help of Carter Ham to try to turn the election against Romney. Now, this time, Petraeus, based on his op-ed in the Washington Post this past week, he's not happy with the demonization, he says, of the of the Islamic community. So it looks to me like the negotiations there have not panned out. In other words, the idea was, is it going to be Petraeus as vice president? Is it going to be Petraeus as secretary of state? Maybe secretary of defense, but somehow Petraeus makes a big comeback. And that's still very, very, very possible. Because a lot of this stuff can also just be deception, right? So much about Trump is deception. He lies. Remember, everything that Trump says about non-interventionism and less of a warmonger has to be measured against that famous pacifism speech by Hitler, May 21st, 1935, where Hitler says, I'm throwing out the Versailles disarmament provisions. Germany is going to rearm up to the international standard. We're going to do whatever we want. But I'm so anxious to conclude arms control and disarmament treaties with you. So lying. I'm amazed to see experienced, battle-hardened international observers, and they believe what Trump says. Well, how about this? Why don't they believe this from Trump? Trump has said he wants to shoot down Russian planes if they buzz the U.S. ships there in the Baltic. Shoot down the Russian planes, says Trump. I hope people in Moscow saw that one. I hope everybody saw it, because that's a ticket to hell on earth. Now we got the Chinese planes in the unsafe intercept. Is Trump proposing to shoot down the Chinese planes too? He is a madman. What would stop him? If he has a bad day, it's perfectly feasible. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley coming to you from New York City this week. And my thesis is Trump needs terrorism like he needs air to breathe from here on in. And it's been so for a month or more. Trump needs terror incidents. They are the grist for his mill of propaganda and demagogy. He needs to be able to point to a constant stream of incidents saying, this is the fruit of the reset by Hillary and the Arab Spring by Hillary. Of course, there's some truth to these things. That's why they're somewhat effective. So he's going to be out there saying, this is because of Hillary's weakness. She's weak Hillary. She's crooked Hillary. She's no good. And this is the fruit of her failed foreign policy. I know how to fix it, says Trump, but I won't tell you. I don't want the enemy to know what they're going to do. And by the way, we had when Trump went to Kissinger, we had various commentators saying, well, it's not really the sellout that you can see pretty plainly in front of your own eyes. It's not this big sellout. It's that Trump wants to get in close with Kissinger and learn his plans. He wants to know what's going to happen from the Trilateral Commission, from the Bilderberger Group, and from the Council on Foreign Relations, where Kissinger, of course, is a great poobah. This is simply pathetic, pathetic self-delusion. The point is, if you want to understand these things, the libertarian ideology, Austrianism, right, which is based on Ernst Mach, it's a wildly subjective gnosiological or epistemological construct. You got to dump that ideology. In other words, Ron Paul didn't betray you just out of nowhere. It's because the betrayal was built in to the ideology. And Rand Paul betrayed, and that was built into the ideology. And Trump, any choices made based on that Austrian libertarian von Mises, von Hayek, and again, it's Ernst Mach is the epistemological guy in that. That's all inevitable. It's doomed to fail. One of the comment lines we saw this past week, we wrote it up in the Tax Wall Street Party briefing, which you should subscribe to, is a guy says, look, I've been bilked and betrayed by Ron Paul. I've been betrayed and, robbed, essentially exploited by Rand Paul. And now I'm supposed to do the same for Trump, and it's just disgusting, and I'm not going to do it. Don't do it. Come on over to the Tax Wall Street Party, because we at least we can show we know what's going on, and we know what we're doing. So now there's a constellation of things that might be of assistance to Trump. Let's just go through these. We are told now that Al-Qaeda is attempting a comeback, that Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, sitting in his cave in Afghanistan or Pakistan, he's not happy that that ISIS is getting all the attention, soap opera script. So Zawahiri, the head of Al-Qaeda, successor to bin Laden, it says we've got to get ourselves back into the game because, after all, it's the 15th anniversary of 9/11, right? 15 years, 2001 to 2016, a decade and a half. And Zawa wants to, he wants to be, involved. So, it means that there will be an attempt to declare an emirate in parts of Syria. This is not a caliphate, but an emirate. And that will be Al-Qaeda and Al-Nusra working together. So they'll be in a co-production, an Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra co-production, and they will attempt to reassert themselves. And there we go. So, this is the kind of thing that Trump will be able to point to, right? He's going to be able to say, look what's happening. This is because of the weakness of Hillary Clinton. Now, couple of other things here. Erdogan of Turkey. Erdogan of Turkey is now in the process of consolidating a dictatorship. He's trying to get this constitutional amendment passed, which will allow his regime to arrest members of parliament, right, the equivalent of congressmen, and arrest them even though they have parliamentary immunity. So it wants to remove the parliamentary immunity that most parliaments and congresses do enjoy. No, no, says Erdogan, those guys are all terrorists. And, of course, the secret is that they're Kurds. Remember that the basis of this entire exercise, right, in other words, this entire series of events leading up to the September-October surprise, is that Erdogan needs it. So we have two, once again, those two parallel lives. Erdogan, the would-be dictator and to some degree actual dictator of Turkey, and then Donald Trump, the would-be dictator of the United States, right? They need each other. We heard on the National Public Radio Weekly Review this morning, ISIS is in a desperate public relations offensive. Well, Trump is in a desperate public relations offensive and keeps stressing the fact he can't win under normal circumstances. He can't win, therefore he needs this terrorism. He needs that going on. So there's a symbiosis between Trump and Erdogan. So they're going to announce an emirate in Syria. Now, there's also Libya. ISIS has taken control of, scores of miles of the Libyan coast. They're committing atrocities in Sirte. They have killed people by immersing them in nitric acid, I believe. General Dunford, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Obama pick, I guess, says it's going to be time soon for the U.S. to have a military mission in Libya. So you can see this is a bad story. So that will be, and then Tunisia, right, is one of the participants helpfully pointed out. The only thing of this crazy, suicidal, insane Arab Spring of Hillary Clinton, to be sure, the only thing left standing is Tunisia, and that looks like it's going to go down fast under the impact of these people from ISIS that are taking over so much. Now, also, I would just like to look in passing. President Xi of China is building up a record of incompetence and erratic behavior. What is this stuff in the South China Sea? Well, Obama's going to Vietnam soon, a couple of days, I think. And there is a negotiation where the U.S. would get a base at Kamran Bay, right, with this splendid natural harbor on the coast of Vietnam that has been contested, you know, for so long among all the great powers, going back 100, 150 years. The Xi regime feels very nervous, I think, about that. And therefore they pull these stunts. And I think they ought to realize that the impact of the stunt is likely to be the opposite of what they seem to expect, right? Now I don't think anybody's gonna back down on that. What you can obviously see is, why don't you have a negotiation where the U.S. does not build a base at Kamran Bay, and the Chinese stop this high-handed, outrageous stuff in the South China Sea? Because those are international waters. Those are as important to Japan, let's say, as they are to China. And Vietnam has their rights, and Taiwan, Republic of China on Taiwan, and the Philippines, and Indonesia, right, and the rest of them. So there's got to be a negotiation, but I think Xi feels that he's too weak. So all of this is a witch's brew. This is a toxic cocktail, and all you need to do is jab at it, and you get developments of the kind that will help Trump, which we wish to avoid. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome to the second hour of World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley speaking to you from New York City, here in town for the Left Forum, and that's going to be on Saturday, the 21st of May. Tax Wall Street Party panel start around noon, and they go through to midday Sunday. So you got to, if you want to hear it, the Alexander Hamilton panel on Sunday, you got to be here by about 10 o'clock, and we will have a gathering of our activists and organizers on Saturday night. And to get to that, just show up in the late afternoon or check in any number of obvious ways, and we'll be letting you know about that. Now, the idea is, let's just sum up what the perspective looks like in the light of the things from the last couple of days this week. First of all, it's likely that we will have to do with a crescendo of terrorist activities. In other words, a kind of a grand finale or crescendo of terrorism. And it's already started. It started 2 weeks ago in Baghdad. And now we have Egypt Air, and we can easily have more. And Trump is still harping about San Bernardino. He's still harping about these events in Belgium, Brussels, and in Paris, right? And of course, the Trump point of view is that he's not responsible for any of that, but the people who are in government are, and therefore he gets to rake them over the coals. Now that dynamic has got to be broken. You've got to counterattack Trump. That's the main business of our second hour today. He's a fascist. He's a Nazi. He's a psychopath, and he's mentally ill. What kind of mental illness? Well, we've got about 8 different hypotheses, and there may be more. So you take your pick among them. Carl Bernstein, saying some useful things for once in a very long time, says that the media need to force Trump to respond on these questions of fascism, and that the networks have failed, these large news organizations have failed to put out documentaries, detailed documentaries telling you who is Trump, who is Hillary, who is Bernie, what have they been doing in the course of their lives, what does their past look like. And I think that's fine. We also know that Bob Woodward, the other side of this combination from Watergate, Woodward says that the Washington Post has got 20 reporters and they're going to do a book on Trump and then a book on Hillary. That's fine. The Tax Wall Street Party is here at the Left Forum to give you, once again, grist for the mill. The raw material about what kind of mentality these people are is extremely important. But before we dive into that, the crescendo may be coming. The crescendo may combine normal terrorism, right, wet work, with economic events, right? As you can see, that's what Trump is now saying. If another couple of planes go down, there will be the biggest depression all over the world. There'll be essentially no travel or communications, and the world economy will shut down. So, weak Hillary Clinton, and he's going to be stronger. One of the questions that Trump must be asked is, are you planning to use nuclear weapons on ISIS? Are you planning to destroy Raqqa with a tactical or larger nuclear weapon? You'll notice we're getting reports now that people in the CIA already yet are saying they don't want Trump to be given these classified briefings because you just can't trust him. He's a megalomaniac. He's going to blurt out whatever he needs in any moment to try to save his narcissistic ego from attack. And in many ways, he can't be president. Remember when you had Nixon in 1974, in the last days of the Watergate scandal, in the throes of possible impeachment coming down the line, you had this combination of Kissinger, interestingly enough, plus James Rodney Schlesinger, plus General Al Haig. And what they said was, we are going to ignore, we're going to disregard any orders from Nixon that would seem to implicate, you know, conflict or confrontation or a nuclear exchange or anything of the sort. In other words, they were going to make sure that Nixon didn't try to start a big war to detract attention and overcome his own personal predicament. Well, Trump starts with that personal predicament, right? And that's what we hear from General Hayden as well. General Michael Hayden, representing Army and NSA and CIA, saying, we will not follow those orders. If you tell us to do things that are illegal, unconstitutional, violate the Geneva Convention, we're just not going to do it. So the problem with Trump, you can see it coming, is a president who's a non-president. In other words, he's a clown and a buffoon, but he cannot actually be trusted with the launch codes and the rest of it, not even with state secrets, because he's going to blurt them out because of the needs of his petty ego. Now, the other thing that Trump might try to benefit from, the 28 pages. Oh, my God, if I hear any more about the 28 pages, it's going to be terrible. The 28 pages are a fraud. The 28 pages are a time bomb from 15 years ago left there by Senator Graham of the family that owns the Washington Post, Florida senator, Democratic senator. And the 28 pages say some things based on claims, right, that these hijackers were Saudis, right? Some were like Mohammed Atta, an Egyptian, but quite a number of them were hijackers. Look, the whole point of the 9/11 truth movement was to assert this principle of MIHOP, right? Made it happen on purpose, that there's really not a terrorist organization out there that can do things of this magnitude, right? Al-Qaeda can blow up a bus or a supermarket, but not this spectacular thing with all these airplanes and the pre-positioning of the charges in the trade towers, Building 7, and all the rest of it, right? So it's a tremendous step backwards to go running after these 28 pages as if that could be anything, right? That was always a way to blackmail Saudi Arabia and so forth, and it's quite possible that Saudi Arabia provided actors, right? Because remember, the people that were doing this, to the extent they were there at all, and that we don't know, but somebody like Atta maybe was indeed there. He thought he was an actor in a drill. He thought he was going to do his hour on the stage, and then he was going to go home to the discotheque and the cocaine and the prostitute that he was living with, right? So there is no other way to look at it, right? They didn't think they were going to get blown up. It may have dawned on them in the last phase that they were going to be blown up. By then, of course, it was too late. The main thing is, you look at all those drills, right? I'm up to almost 50 drills on the day of, in the morning of, or leading up to that. And in most cases, there are role players, there are actors, there are walk-on parts where they are there to increase the seriousness, the realism of the drill. So that is being lost in this silly, childish, puerile quest for the 28 pages. So I urge people, don't waste your time on that. And certainly don't give up everything that was learned, all of the progress in understanding the way these terrorist events are actually organized, right? Don't fall into LIHOP, or worse. You can fall into unanswered questions. You can fall into essentially nothing. Hang on to the MIHOP thesis, and you'll see that this 28-page business is simply a smokescreen. Again, maybe serving to blackmail Saudi Arabia. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster talking here in New York City. And we hope to see you at the Left Forum between noon Saturday, noon Sunday. There are four panels from the Tax Wall Street Party. There's also a gathering there in the evening for sincere friends and admirers of the Tax Wall Street Party. But now, we're looking to these people, right? Woodward is out there. Bernstein is out there calling for it. We need Oppo research. We've got to have people understanding better what Trump is. Remember, most people have not been following this, right? Trump says he's got 10 million votes. That's not that many. And, of course, the people who came into the Republican primaries, more people came into the Republican primaries to oppose Trump than to support him. So don't let yourself be stampeded. Don't be a dupe, which is, of course, the unfortunate tendency. But now, concerning all that opposition research, what can we contribute? We can contribute plenty. And let's get to it. Trump is a psychopath, according to one of the contemporary authorities on narcissistic leaders, that is McCopy. Psychopaths operate at the lowest level of moral reasoning with no concern for the common good. They have no remorse or guilt for self-serving actions that harm other people. They do not build lasting relationships. And among the corporate leaders who are psychopaths, the worst ones are the ones who build up empires of debt. And that is the case of Trump, right? This was not written in this book to apply to him, but this is where it actually goes. So we're calling on the media. Remember Dr. Justin Frank, 2004, Bush on the couch. His finding was that George W. Bush was a megalomaniac. We urgently need a similar study for Trump. Now, I am the author of the 1988 leaflet at the Democratic National Convention in Atlanta, which called attention to the mental health problems of Dukakis. And this had some effect on the election, but not the one I wanted, which is they would turn away from Dukakis and nominate somebody actually qualified. George H.W. Bush, I've written about him, the unauthorized biography, 1992. Bush had thyroid problems, but not just Graves' disease. He had something awful, Basadow's disease of the thyroid, leading to Operation Thyroid Storm. And we've got that other example of Ludendorff bungling the last offensive in the spring of 1918 in World War One because he had Basadow's disease. Now, it's fine to say racist, sexist, misogynist, xenophobe. Yes, but inadequate and a loser in the end. Nativist, know-nothing, white supremacist, egomaniac, that's better, but it's got to be fascist and Nazi, and people have got to be confronted. Those spokespeople have got to be confronted. And Bernie Sanders, you've got to take responsibility. You've got to get out there and say Trump is a fascist, because otherwise you're not assuming the responsibilities of the Democratic presidential candidate. Right? The answer to a lot of the problems we're talking about here is that Bernie Sanders should win the Democratic nomination for president, not Hillary Clinton. You can see she's too weak. Her approach, I'm above this, I won't roll in the mud. I'm sorry, Gotta lock horns and wallow in the thorns. You gotta go into the blood and sand of the arena. If you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. So Trump, morally, intellectually unfit for the presidency, keep his hand off the nuclear button. Now, we have made the case on fascism. This is quite a number of my slides for tomorrow. Once we understand that Trump is a fascist, we see the reality. Mussolini and Hitler were both megalomaniacs, so fascists and megalomaniacs at the same time. How about Trump? And this cannot be a taboo. People thought they could control Hitler through his advisors. That was von Papen in one way, and Hugenberg, the head of the Krupp Steelworks, from another point of view. Didn't work. Susan Sarandon says we could vote for Trump, and if he wins, he'll be ousted by a revolution. I don't want to see it. Revolutionary forces are nowhere developed, nowhere organized, nowhere to be seen. I don't think you want to do that, Susan. So we get to know everything about these people. Trump has obviously got severe problems. First hypothesis, Alzheimer's disease. Donald Trump's father, Fred Trump, died of Alzheimer's disease. And this is genetic. It's always genetic. It's more genetic in the early onset kind of Alzheimer's disease. But in the late onset, post 65 years of age, Alzheimer's disease, that's also got a component of hereditary influence. So look at Trump. 3 to 4 positions on abortion in 1 week after the Chris Matthews interview. Talks about the first use of nuclear weapons, but erratically jumps back and forth. Are we going to raise or lower the taxes on the rich? On March 3rd, Trump had 3 different positions on H-1B visas, and the website kept saying that he was against them. In Pennsylvania, he wants to know, how's Joe Paterno? Are we going to bring that back? The guy had been dead for 4 years. And, of course, the fact was that Paterno seemed to have known all about Sandusky. Hannity asked him, which federal agencies would you shut down? The Department of Environmental. In New York, he thought that 9/11 had happened on 7/11. He went to the Washington Post editorial board. How about tactical nuclear weapons against ISIS? And he says, I don't want to start the process of nuclear. Remember the one thing that everybody said about me? I'm a counterpuncher. Rubio hit me. Bush hit me. When I said low energy, he's a low energy individual. He hit me first. I spent, by the way, he spent $18 million worth of negative ads on me. That's putting something then unintelligible. And the Washington Post editors essentially say, wait a minute, how about ISIS? You're going to use a nuclear weapon or not? And Trump then, this reminds me of Admiral Stockdale. Remember him? Perot's vice presidential candidate, Admiral James Stockdale. Oh, he says, I'll tell you, this is Trump now back at the WAPO. I'll tell you one thing. This is a very good looking group of people here. Could I just go around so I know who the hell I'm talking to? So look, criteria for dementia, senility. If you've got 2 of these impaired, you better get help. Memory, communication language, ability to focus, pay attention, reasoning and judgment, visual perceptions. I think he's got 2. He ought to be under a doctor's care. And his father died of Alzheimer's. Second, we can use the one that Trump claims to have, because he does. Trump says that he's got obsessive compulsive disorder, borderline OCD. Is it a limited hangout? We'll tell you when we come back on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Come see us at New York Left Forum, May 20th, 21st to 22nd. That would be Saturday, Sunday from noon to noon, 4 panels at different times of the Tax Wall Street Party. Okay, we've done the Alzheimer's hypothesis. Now let's go over to the obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, this is what he says he has. It means that he's been to a shrink. We want those records. All of this stuff is designed to force him to release his medical records, just as I forced Dukakis in 1988 to release his records. Okay? So Trump says he has borderline obsessive compulsive disorder. That can be a limited hangout. 1% of U.S. adults have this strong genetic predisposition involved. So Trump says he's got borderline OCD. He's afraid of germs. He will not shake hands with people, but especially not with teachers, because they have to deal with all these kids. He says teachers have 17,000 germs per square inch on their desks. Has he been counting? Of course, with OCD, you count everything. His phobia prevents him from touching the ground floor button on elevators, because that's the one that everybody else pushes. So orderliness, neatness, strictly delineated separation. Nothing can be mixed in closets, in the food on your plate. Counting all the time. Obsessed with routine. Obsessed by perceived snubs or insults. Endless rehashing, rumination, review. Howard Hughes had obsessive compulsive disorder. I guess he also had other things. He was obsessed with the size of peas. Severe mood swings. Is that what you want in the White House? Jane Russell's blouse. He ate only chicken, chocolate, and milk. Trump has had some phobias reported. Trump has all kinds of problems with handshakes. He's got to wash his hands and the rest of it. Narcissism and megalomania. Now, the key thing here is usually the absent father. Well, it was in the case of Trump, it was the absent son. He was sent away to military school at New York Military Academy for grades 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. He was brutally beaten by coaches. Some of these were war veterans. Some, God knows what sickos these were. Apparently, according to some, we're dealing with full-blown narcissistic personality disorder. Grandiosity, the thirst for admiration, and the lack of empathy, in the words of one of the leading psychologists, and that is Heinz Kohut, American psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, who writes about self-psychoanalysis. We also want to take a look at the Christopher Lash book, The Culture of Narcissism, American Life in an Age of Diminishing Expectations, because here you get the idea. You have Trump sending out these resonances of being a narcissist. Are Trump voters latent would-be narcissists who admire, above all, Trump's ability to act out his narcissistic, sadistic fantasies on a grandiose scale with impunity? So here's a dialectic between the mental illness of the candidate and the latent mental problems of his supporters. Now, that is sick. Let's see what else we have about this. Now, for Lash, this is part of this, the famous shift, right? David Reisman's Lonely Crowd. You're going from the inner directed to the other directed personality, and the narcissists are becoming stronger and more numerous as you go along. Freud, had a different array of problems, to deal with in his patients, but today, it's things like diffuse character disorders, schizophrenia, pre-schizophrenia, borderline disorders, and this is what Trump seems to resonate with. Fred Trump told Donald, "You're a killer. You're the king." Saw him practicing embezzlement and racism, and the idea was little Donald never got any attention, even when he was home. The attention he got was to be allowed to come along with the father and watch him. But it was never about Donald. It was always about, come and see how I evict a tenant or something. Now, here's the question of the superego, right? Because Trump is sadistic, right? We know this. And he's not restrained by superego. In other words, he says, I'll kill all the families. I'll destroy these cities. The more defenseless they are, the weaker they are, the more he's going to enjoy it. But what about the superego? Is there any restraint? Now, the idea here is, because of the absent family, and above all, the absent father, Trump has a superego, sure, but it's a sick one. It's harsh. It's punitive, ferocious in this sense. If you can develop a superego during your teenage years into your early 20s, you can get a civilized, superego that gives you a sense of responsibility, duty. You can say that your superego is your devotion to the country, to the Constitution, to religious faith, to other conscious values that mean something. But if you're treated the way little Donald was, you have a superego, which is simply something like win and beat those other guys up and kill them, right? Here we go. Be a killer. Be a king. That is useless as a superego. So he's got an underdeveloped and archaic, I think he's usually called, an archaic superego that is just the most basic imperative. A lot of those are sick. So that's another one. Trump hates women. This means he fears women. The hatred of women is the same thing as the fear of women. Melanie Klein, decades ago, wrote about the rage against the mother. Trump obviously fears physical impotence. There's no way around it, right? The little hands. And one of the reasons, according to Lash, not least because of fear, that an Anglo-Saxon culture is about to fall before the advances of a hardier race. This is what he's playing with in the subconscious mind of his duped supporters. The narcissist male is characterized by a boundless rage against the female sex. Now, the Trump supporters, they've got all kinds of problems, right? Their self-esteem can be enhanced by attaching themselves to a strong, admired figure. And they don't have a strong superego. They've got a chaotic and impulse-ridden character that allows them to gravitate. And the supporters are promiscuous rather than repressed. So Trump is situated at the border between neurosis and psychosis with his grandiose conception of himself. Grandiosity is the key word in this. Remember, Freud wrote that another person's narcissism has a great attraction for those who have renounced part of their own, as if we envied them for maintaining a blissful state of mind, an unassailable libidinal position which we ourselves have been forced to abandon. So, Fred Sr., absentee father, only value is winning, only value is money. And here we have the New York Times clipping, Klansmen riot in Queens, 1927, Fred Trump. Michael McCobe, the gamesman, says if you're a narcissistic business leader like Trump, you seek the exhilaration of gaining victories, winning, being better. That's it. No other values. Cohut, narcissism is based on lack of empathy from your own parents. And now we're up to hypothesis number 4, and we'll be back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Let's hurry on through. We want to get all of the Trump hypotheses out there on the table. For detailed discussion, come to the Tax Wall Street Party panels at the Left Forum. So Trump hypothesis number 4, manic depressive bipolar personality disorder with borderline. So manic depressive bipolar with borderline personality disorder. Now, this is borderline in the sense of a specific thing like narcissistic or otherwise. So here's the idea. Manic depressive bipolar. You go from elation and euphoria to profound mental depression. And there are cycles. Now, the problem with this is it's going to take observation. Does Trump exhibit these ego, these manic depressive cycles? Well, what are the intervals? What are the implications of a manic phase for a strategic or financial? Are the implications for the depressive phase for a strategic or financial crisis? Has Trump ever taken lots of days off the campaign trail? Hard to tell. He may have. Right? We need to go back and look at some of these things. So, Oppo researchers, please come forward. Trump hypothesis number 5, sadistic personality disorder. We've already mentioned it, right? Delight in inflicting pain and suffering on the weak and the helpless. You're fired. And remember, sadism, sadistic personality disorder, has a high comorbidity. It coexists with things like manic depressive or obsessive compulsive. It is an obvious means of compensating for inner feelings of hurt and worthlessness, which was that Donald's parents didn't have any time for him. He never got activities around him. His father would take him out, you know, on evictions and so forth. But, and then later packed him off, right? When he began acting up, when Trump punched the teacher in his secondary school, then out, he was sent off packing up the Hudson River Valley. So Trump obviously targets undocumented immigrants. He wants to destroy Raqqa. He wants goons to beat the protesters. The dark triad of sadism, psychopathy, and narcissism. Okay, Trump hypothesis number six, histrionic personality disorder with infantile regression. So this is a blend of the histrionic and borderline personalities. The main thing is weak reality principles. The technique of the histrionic personality disorder to sexualize relationships prematurely, pull powerful people into their orbit. On this basis, the histrionic personality experience more indulgence and fewer frustrations. They need to be the center of attention. They require persistent sensation-seeking, primitive regressions into fantasy, like, I'll build the wall and make Mexico pay, all of which serve the pleasure principle for them, not for anybody else. They always need the assurance to maintain their stability. They're always complaining that they are unloved or treated unfairly. Oh, my God, treated unfairly. The classic lament of Trump. And these attitudes escalate into tantrums when anyone disagrees. Trump hypothesis number seven, multiple personality disorder. Now, this is a little bit sketchy, but still, Trump has now been exposed as an imposter in his own life who impersonated his own public relations spokesman, John Miller, except John Miller never existed, right? He pretended to be John Miller, and he told the reporters how great Donald Trump was. Even worse than this, I mean, whatever he did in 1980, this can be one thing or another, but the worst thing is that Trump denies that he didn't do it, that the voice on tape is not his voice. It's obviously Trump. Donald J. Trump did this, but he denies it. So he's a compulsive liar. Fred Trump, by the way, interesting family parallel. Fred Trump did dirty deals calling himself Mr. Green. So if Mr. Green wanted to do some dirty, illegal discrimination or embezzlement of U.S. government funds, then he'd call himself Mr. Green. Now, because of Trump's eating habits, Trump hypothesis number eight, that would be Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, VCJD or NVCJD. Because of eating three low-quality Trump steaks per day, these may have been tainted with bovine spongiform encephalopathy. And that then leads to memory loss, personality changes, and hallucinations. We've gotten close to hallucinations on some of these other maladies. So, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease as a derivative of mad cow disease. Mad cow being bovine spongiform encephalopathy. Perfectly feasible for Trump. There's also the problem, Trump hypothesis number nine, alcoholic codependence in the family. If you read the literature, they talk about how families enable the alcoholism of members, right? So the dysfunctional Trump family, dysfunctional clearly, enabled the alcoholism of the elder brother, Fred J. Trump Jr. The alcoholic is said to suffer from the disease of addiction, we read, whereas the family members suffer from the disease of codependence. So he's got codependence. Now, What else do we have? There is this question of Trump and his personal Vietnam. He says that he didn't go to the war in Vietnam. He claims that he has these bone spurs, but he talks about the bone spurs as if he had them then, back in the 1970s. When he talks about himself today, and indeed in the letter that he showed, right, there was a letter released by the Trump campaign in December of last year, which says that he's amazingly healthy, and if he's elected, he's going to be the healthiest person ever elected to the presidency. That's no MD, and I don't think anybody can actually know that, because those records would require a huge research project to find out who was the healthiest president up to now and whether Trump is healthier. But here's the problem. If you say that you didn't go to Vietnam, that really ought to be reflected somewhere in the medical records. So that's an important issue in itself. But then there's this other thing. He said, well, I was fighting my own personal Vietnam. What was the personal Vietnam, Don? Oh, it was not getting venereal disease, not getting sexually transmitted diseases. And ultimately, you know, by the time you're in the 80s, it would be not being HIV, not getting AIDS. Say long-term syphilis, right? We've talked about the possible effects of the Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, the mad cow derivative. If you have long-term syphilis, then you can also get dementia. You can go gradually insane from that. So that would have been the 10th. I guess we've got a grand total of 10, count of 10 hypotheses. Remember that Trump is written up in textbooks as a case of psychopathology. And what's the prognosis? You put somebody in the pressure cooker atmosphere of the White House, they've got delusions of grandeur, they're going to be headed for more severe megalomania. They're going to be headed towards paranoid schizophrenia and a downward spiral of crimes and atrocities. Remember, the Emperor Nero, before becoming emperor, he was able to organize himself, at least to pretend to be a very, almost benevolent person. But once he got the power, then he went wild and began killing. So look at Nero, Napoleon, Hitler, George W. Bush. The track is all downhill. So will Trump Tower be the bunker, Berlin? And will Mar-a-Lago be Berchtesgaden, there in the Bavarian Alps? So, these are the questions the American people have a right to know, and we will do our best to make that right, to get it respected. And we'll see you next week on World Crisis Radio.